Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbath Training Congregation outside the 12th Hour here in Georgia, Texas. Today is November 2, 2017, Art is Bill 14, 2021, we will start. First service today with a song entitled, I'm Thine, O Yahweh.
I'm Thine, O Yahweh, Thy voice. And it's hold thy love to me. And I long to rise in the answer of faith, and be closer drawn to thee. Draw me near, blessed Yah, to the cross where thou hast died. Draw me near, blessed Yah, to that precious bleeding side. Consecrate me now to the service, Yah, for the power of grace divine. Let my soul look up with a steadfast hope, and my will be lost in thine. Come in, blessed Yah, to the cross where thou hast died. Come in, blessed Yah, to that precious breathing sign. Oh, the pure delight of a single love that before thy throne I stand. When I kneel in prayer and with thee, my Yah, I commune as when with friends. Draw me near, blessed Yah, to the cross where thou hast died. Draw me near, blessed Yahshua, to that precious leading sign. There are depths of love that I cannot know till I cross the narrow sea. There are heights of joy that I may not reach till I rest in peace with thee. Draw me near, blessed Yah, to the cross where thou hast died. Draw me near, blessed Yahshua, to that precious leading sign.
Esau and Jacob, Part 6, Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 104. Cloud by day, fire by night. And the Yahweh went before them by day in a pillar of a cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light to go by day and night. He took not away the pillar of the cloud by day, nor the pillar of the fire by the night from before the people. It was not Moses that led Israel out of Egypt, but the pillar of the cloud that went before the people. Well, you see now this, Vitihadov could have done better than that right there. He could have done a lot better than that. He puts in parentheses, it was not Moses that led Israel out of Egypt, but the pillar of the cloud. Now, isn't this amazing? If that was so, then why didn't Yahshua just go, instead of the burning bush, calling Moses at the burning bush and say, I want you to go down and lead my people out of Egypt. Why didn't he just go to that burning cloud and say, okay, cloud, I want you to go down into Egypt and lead my people out of Egypt. You see how asinine even prophets can be. They can be stupid sometimes. Now, Vitihadov made a tongue-in-cheek statement here. It was not Moses that led Israel out of Egypt, but the pillar of the cloud that went before the people. But the pillar of the cloud. Well, it's true. Paul says that Yahshua was that rock and the cloud. That's 1 Corinthians 10, verse 4. He said, Yahshua was a rock in that cloud that led the children of Israel out of Egypt. What about Moses? Moses was the first one that Yahshua addressed at the burning bush. He says, go down there. And he gave Moses a tremendous test to prove him. And then he even sent Aaron to be his prophet, to go with him, to accompany him down into Egypt. And the two worked together to deliver the children of Israel out of Egypt. So you see, it says, it was not Moses that led Israel out of Egypt. Wrong. It was Moses that led Egypt out of, you see, that led Israel out of Egypt. And it was Yahshua, the rock in that cloud, that went before the people. And 1 Corinthians 10, verse 4. And the Yahweh and the Yahshua went before them to lead them in the way, to go by day and by night. He took not away the pillar from before the people. Exodus 13, 21, 23. According unto 1 Corinthians 10, 4, and this pillar of the cloud by day and the pillar of the fire by the night was Yahshua himself. Well, P.T. Hall finally goes on and makes the statement, and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Yahshua. Thus we see that Yahshua led out Israel himself, and not Moses. Well, then what was Moses doing there? What was Moses doing there? Just like Gilead Center, 1970. He chose Brother Johnson to lead out and head up Gilead Center. Well, if I had gone, if my mother had called me that day and said, I want you to come and pick me up, and when I went to pick her up, she says, I want you to meet Brother Johnson. These are my friends that I was staying with. And I met Brother Johnson. He taught me the truth. I accepted it. Well, my mother didn't tell me, and now you're following Jesus Christ. You're not following this man, you're following Jesus Christ. I'd have turned around and walked off. I went back home and left her there. She said, this is the man that God has chosen. And he's got the truth. And I accepted the truth he had, and so therefore I chose to follow Brother W. Johnson. I didn't have enough faith to believe otherwise. Though the children of Israel didn't have enough faith down in Egypt to believe otherwise either. Moses couldn't have gone and told them, now you're not following me, you're following Jesus Christ. That's that rock in the cloud. No, he'd have told him, if he had told him that, he'd say, you're following Yahshua the Messiah, the son of the ever-living Elohim. Moses didn't tell him that. He took that rod down there and he used it as the authority for Yahweh's government, and he says, Yahweh. He says, Yahweh has demanded that you let my people go. And again, Moses might introduce Yahshua, that rock in the cloud, and say, Yahshua has demanded. But anyway, either way, it had been Moses speaking through by that rod. Okay? So it says the people as well as Moses followed the cloud. All Moses did was to convey to the people the words and instructions received from the Yahshua. Well, that's true. That's true. All Brother Johnson did was, when he started Creation Channel in 1970, he said, Yahweh called me. Back then, he used the word God. He says, God called me. 1968, 1969, to make a calendar, to teach my people my government. Yeah, Brother Johnson gave Yahweh the credit. But it was Brother Johnson that was speaking to us. Okay. So he says, this is the experience of Israel after flesh, which we call a photograph of Israel by the promise. If this is true, then the 144,000 must experience the same in departing out from the whirlwind. Of course, I have to admit, when Yahshua came to earth to represent the Father from heaven, he said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. He said, I do always those things that please the Father. He says, I am sent of the Father. I am the Son of Him. And the Pharisees thought to stone him and to kill him. And they end up finally killing him because he claimed to be the Son of Yahweh. And he says that if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And the words that I speak are the words of my Father. Well, that's the way it's always been. Moses, the words that he spoke was the words of Yahweh. Brother Johnson, at the beginning, 1970, the words that he spoke was the words of Yahweh. So we all understood that, but we still looked to the man. We looked to the prophet. We was always proud to be able to point to the man and say, we have a living prophet in our midst that has inspiration. And when the people believed the truth, they would accept that man as having inspiration. But if they didn't accept and believe the truth, they wouldn't accept nobody to have inspiration. That's the way it's always been. Those that accepted Yahshua had miracles performed upon them by the power that came through Yahshua from the Father. And they always understood that the words that Yahshua spoke were the words of the Father. Okay, volume 5, page 8. Yahweh has promised that where the shepherds are not true, he will take charge of the flock himself. Okay, Moses was true. So Yahshua didn't take charge of the flock himself. Moses took charge of the flock by the power of coming through that rod that he had. Okay. Patriarchs and Prophets, page 283, and one of the most beautiful and comforting passages of the Isaiah's prophecy, references made to the pillar of the cloud of the fire to represent Yahweh's care for his people. And the great final struggle with the powers of evil, the Yahshua, this is the Son now, will create upon every dwelling place of Mount Zion, upon her assemblies, a cloud and a smoke by day, and the shine of a flaming fire by night, for above all the glory shall be a covering. I just want to read that again. For the Yahweh the Father will create upon every dwelling place of Mount Zion, and upon her assemblies, a cloud and smoke by day, and the shine of a flaming fire by night. But what did the Father do when he created that? He sent his Son Yahshua to live in that cloud for 40 years. Yahweh created it. He sent he and the Son together created it. Because it says that the Father created all things by his Son. And it says in 1 John chapter 1. And without him was not anything created that was created. So whatever was created by the Father, he created by his Son. And there shall be a tabernacle for a shadow and the daytime from the heat, and for a place of the refuge, and for a covert from the storm and from rain. Thus the idea of Israel being a photograph is supported by both the Bible and the spirit of prophecy. Joseph, type of the Yahshua. Joseph stands as a perfect type of the Yahshua. First of all, the name Joseph means he shall add. So Yahshua added the human family to the heavenly. Had any sin been recorded against Joseph, it would have spoiled the type, for Yahshua is not a sinner. Joseph was loved by his father above all his brethren. Of Yahshua we read in Hebrews 1:9, thou hast loved righteousness and hated iniquity. Therefore Yahweh, even thy Elohim, hath anointed thee with all of the oil of gladness above thy fellows. Joseph was sent down into Egypt to preserve the lives of his brethren in the 7 years of famine. Just so Yahshua descended to preserve the lives of his brethren in the world of sin. Okay, what's the antitype of this? What's the antitype of it? 2002, Kermit, Texas. The prophet, Brother Johnson, prophesied that year that Yahshua is going to come in the person. This is the antitype of his anointing his 11 disciples 2,000 years ago at the Passover. This is a direct antidote. This is the year. Okay, so Yahshua's coming. So if, and I believe he came. I know, in fact, I know he came. He came there. He was invisible, but he came. He was there in person. And he descended. And what did he descend for? To preserve the life of his brethren that was ready to be destroyed along with the temple of Israel, the Gilead Center, 2002, because whenever he took his, preserved the life of his servants, he pulled them out of there, the house of David's servants, he pulled them out of there, and then he destroyed that house of Israel, Gilead Center. He destroyed it. Brought it to his end, dissolved it, planed it off. Joseph was sold to the Ishmaelites, who were the descendants of Ishmael, Abraham's seed after the flesh. This soul, Yahshua, was sold to the priest, the descendants of Abraham, Israel, and after the flesh, parentheses. So, see, here V.T. Hollis could have very well hit a home run again if he'd have said, just so Yahshua was sold unto the priest, the descendants of Abraham, Ishmael, after the flesh, would have been more accurate. Joseph was a governor. Okay, Joseph, and no man could lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt without the knowledge of Joseph. Just so, Yahshua is a governor over the world, Egypt, and no man can lift hand or foot without the knowledge of the Yahshua. As there was only one above Joseph, namely Pharaoh, just so there is only one above Yahshua, Yahweh the Father. Joseph was 30 years old when he became a governor. Yahshua was 30 years of age when anointed. As Joseph married the daughter of an idolatrous priest, just so Yahshua marries his church, which is made up of idolatrous nations. As Joseph gathered the corn in the 7 years of plenty into the storehouse to feed the world in the 7 years of famine, just so Yahshua gathered the word of Yahweh in the Old Testament time into the great storehouse of Bible to feed the world in the New Testament time. One may say, the New Testament came in A.D., true. But the New Testament is only the fulfillment of the Old. See, this is not a very clear explanation. Because I want to read that again and see if I can't put a little bit more clarity on that. As Joseph gathered the corn in the 7 years of plenty into the storehouses to feed the world in the 7 years of the famine, just so Yahshua gathered the word of Yahweh in the Old Testament time into the great storehouse, the Bible, to feed the world in the New Testament time. Okay. The Reformers was raised up, starting with Martin Luther in 1500 A.D., a Catholic monk out of the Catholic Church. And he brought forth a buried doctrine, righteousness by faith, justification by faith. The rest of it was by faith in the blood of the Yahshua. That was not written, but it was that was what converted Martin Luther. He understood justification by faith in the blood of the Yahshua. That's what converted Martin Luther completely from Catholicism to Christianity, as we call it. That was a grain of knowledge. Justification by faith is represented by the grain wheat. Righteousness by faith, justification by faith is represented by the grain wheat. So, what did Joseph of old store up in the storehouses? He literally stored up the grains of wheat and corn and barley and all of those different grains that they grew back then for food. And all those different grains represented a certain doctrine today. So we see where those grains back then were symbols of the grains of the doctrinal truths today that has been buried in the storehouse, that has been put up in the storehouse, and when it comes time for it to be used to preserve life, then it's brought forth. So in that case, you can say the New Testament time, yes, has been the time for the dispensing of this grain little by little as it is needed to restore truth in the earth. One may say the New Testament came in AD. Yeah, true. But the New Testament is only the fulfillment of the Old. Now, had not Joseph become a governor of Egypt before the beginning of the 7 years of plenty, it would have spoiled the significance. And the type would not then have indicated that Yahshua ruled before the world's history began. Thus we see Joseph is a perfect type of the Yahshua. Pharaoh, type of the leaders. Joseph, who honored Joseph is a perfect type of the earthly head of the Church of the Apostles. Had Pharaoh not been an Egyptian, it would have spoiled the type. Egypt, a symbol of the world, signifies an earthly leadership taken out of the world. Had not Pharaoh honored Joseph above every man in Egypt, or had he not command the Egyptians to go unto Joseph for coin, it would have spoiled the symbol of the church leadership in the days of the apostles, for they exalted and honored Yahshua above every man in the entire world. Also commended the Gentiles to Yahshua as their life giver. If the first Pharaoh makes a perfect type of the church leadership in the days of the apostles, then we must accept the last Pharaoh, who knows not Joseph, as a perfect type of the church leadership who have turned from following Yahshua, their leader. Volume 5, page 217. Seventh-day Adventist Church has turned back from following the Yahshua, her leader, and is steadily retreating toward Egypt. And when was that statement made? Back in the time when around 1888, 1890, I think it was maybe probably after 1890, or right during that 2 year period of 1888, 1890, the General Conference leadership obviously were on the march leading the children of Israel back into Egypt. And indeed, Sister White made the statement after 1890, she says, the church has successfully made its way back to Egypt. Okay. Thus Israel, the truth, the 144,000, became slaves under the Egyptian bondage. So the 144,000 are yet to be disclosed of you. They're in the Adventist church. So apparently the Adventist church is identified today as being in the Egyptian bondage. Matter of fact, they represent the Egyptian bondage that has 144,000 in bondage. Okay, so when the second great exodus takes place, Isaiah 11, and that takes place, that's when Revelation 14, 1 through 5, that's when you will understand that the 144,000 then are disclosed to you, because it's time for them to come forth out of Egyptian bondage. So apparently the second great exodus is yet still in front of us to be performed. The bondage in Egypt represents the bondage of sin. Well, that's 144,000, even though they're pure and undefiled, they're still in the bondage of sin. They're held captive in the bondage of sin by the antitypical Egyptians, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, as it was in the type. There were those that was delivered out of Egypt by the blood on the doorpost at the Passover, and they stayed faithful. All the way through the wilderness for 40 years, they stayed faithful. And then when the 40 years is up, Yahweh appointed a new leader, Joshua, and he took those faithful ones that had been faithful for 40 years through the wilderness that came out of Egypt. He took them into the promised land. They are a type of the 144,000. Brother Johnson said the 144,000 was assigned to his movement in 1970. And when he told that, I believed it with all my heart. Inspiration and presence that that was so. Well, if that was so, then there's been a 40-year period has gone by from 1970 to 2010, as I prophesied. There's a 40-year period for Gilead Center, just like it was for the rod. Now, we are approaching 8 years this side of that 40-year period. 2018 is right here on it. Okay, it says, it says, the bondage in Egypt represents the bondage of sin. Review and Herald, January 23rd, 1930. Well, apparently the Adventists republished that statement by Ellen G. White, because she died in 1915. And the harp. And the violet, and the vial, the tablet, and pipe, and wine are in her, and their feast. But they regard not the work of the Yeshua, the Son. They don't regard the work of the Yeshua. Now they consider the operation of his hands. Therefore my people are gone into captivity because they have no knowledge. And their honorable men are famished, and their multitude dried up with the thirst. Isaiah 5:12-13. Israel being a type of this Advent movement is not a new idea, just thought of in this lesson. The whole denomination believes so, for we read in the Review and Herald of October 10, 1929, the following statement: while the Exodus movement was a great movement, the Second Advent movement will be still greater. Yahweh will take but out a people, not from one nation only, but from every nation under heaven, and he will lead them into the heavenly Canaan. This Advent movement, of which the Exodus movement was a type, we believe was foretold in the prophecy in the following stirring language: it shall come to pass in that day that the Yeshua shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which shall be led. There shall be a highway for the remnant of his people, like as it was unto Israel on the day that he came up out of the land of Egypt, Isaiah 11:16. Well, the word type means the same as the word photograph. The very first photo invented was called a tintype. Thus, we have the approval of the denomination that Israel after the flesh is a photograph of Israel by the promise, the 144,000. Well, Israel after flesh now. Those that made it through the wilderness that came out of Egypt, and that made it through the wilderness and into the promised land under Joshua, they had a 40-year sojourn, but part of their brethren didn't make it because they rebelled at Kadesh Barnea, and a curse is put on them for that. And even at the borders of Canaan, 23,000 priests were purged out because they entertained the Midianite harlots, the Moab, from Moab. They entertained them and purged out 23,000 priests before crossing over. Those were the Israel after the flesh. But those that crossed under Joshua, they were Israel after the Spirit, because they're a type of the 144,000. So Vitihalif is making a mistake here when he says that the denomination of Israel after the flesh is a photograph of Israel by the promise of 144,000. No. Israel after the Spirit is a photograph, because 144,000 comes out of the Israel after the Spirit. Ellen G. White was Israel after the Spirit. She was not Israel after the flesh. Her husband, James White, was Israel after the flesh. represent a double leadership there. So the grizzled horses, and that prophecy of Zechariah 6 that represents the prophecy of the double leadership in the Adventist church, the grizzled horses connected to the bay horses. The bay horses represents Israel after the spirit, not the flesh. And the grizzled horses represent Israel after the flesh, the descendants of the Pharisees at the cross. That was Israel after the flesh. So now, this double leadership in the Adventist church is beginning to clear up more and more all the time. The bay horses, the prophet with the inspiration are represented by the bay horses. The leadership without inspiration is represented by the grizzled horses. And that's your general conference of president and his officers. And all the ministers of the Adventist church are represented by those grizzled horses. Israel after flesh. But those that follow the inspiration of the spirit of prophecy by Ellen G. White, V.T. Hollis, and Brother Johnson. Now, Brother Johnson has the inspiration. There's only three prophets since 1844 that had inspiration. That was Ellen G. White, V.T. Hollis, and Brother Johnson. And then Elijah David, the fourth one, that had inspiration. Okay, and these were all Israel after the Spirit. Now, Brother Johnson got the title of Israel after the Spirit when he obeyed Yahweh's command to make that creation calendar and teach my people my government. And he laid the creation calendar down, and he laid the Yahweh's government down, and he published it, and he taught it for 7 years. But then he apostatized and became Israel after the flesh because he was an Edomite. And nevertheless, he started off as Yahweh's chosen vessel, and he did what Yahweh told him to do for at least 7 years. But then he apostatized. He says that as Yahweh called out Israel from Egypt and anciently, just so now Yahweh is calling his church out from the whirlwinds and wilderness to be a separate, peculiar people unto his honor and glory. This does not mean another movement, but it does mean that Yahweh is to deal with the entire body, and those who escape are Israel, the 144,000. Quoting Revere and Herald, May the 1st, 1930, every evil thing must be shaken from the movement. So it was in the Exodus movement, when there was sin among the people, that Yahweh did not give up that movement which he had brought out of Egypt and start another one. He did not call the believers out, but he shook unbelief out of the movement by the destruction causing their death. He purified it by the setting aside from it every element that did not belong with the movement that he was leading according to his promise. No one pretext or another. On one pretext or another, unbelief and disorder moved out while the movement itself marched on. Alright, let's read that. Let's read that again. Joseph was a governor, and no man could lift a hand or foot in all the land of Egypt without the knowledge of Joseph. Just so. Yeshua is a governor over the world. Egypt. And no man can lift hand or foot without the knowledge of the Yeshua. As there was only one above Joseph, namely Pharaoh, just so there is only one above Yeshua, Yahweh the Father. Joseph was 30 years old when he became governor. Yeshua was 30 years of age when anointed. As Joseph married the daughter of an idolatrous priest, just so Yeshua marries a church which is made up of idolatrous nations. I made a little mischief here. I went back a page too far. According to Review and Herald, May the 1st, 1930, every evil thing must be shaken from the movement. So it was in the Exodus movement when there was sin among the people. The Yeshua did not give up that movement which he had brought out of Egypt and start another one. He did not call the believers out, but he shook unbelief out of the movement by the destruction causing their death. Well, that's what happened down at Kermit. Because that chariot, that fourth chariot in Zechariah 6, that represents the Adventist church, Brother Johnson was in charge of it. And as long as Brother Johnson taught the present truth, doctrine that Yahweh gave him to teach, he represented the bay horses. But whenever he apostatized from it and lost his way, then he represented the grizzled horses. And Elijah David took over the bay horses, keeping the pure doctrine continuing on. So it says, and this is what happened. The prophet, Volus, he's come and gone. He's dead now. It's proven that he didn't have to die, because we were in the period of the time of the judgment of the living, when Yahweh is ready to restore all things and make them eternal, according to 1 Corinthians 15. But because he chose the wages of sin, which is death, that's in Romans chapter 6, that's why he ended up like he did. He said he purified it by setting aside from it every element that did not belong. He purified it by setting aside from it every element that did not belong with the movement that he was leading according to his promise. On one pretext or another, unbelief and disorder moved out while the movement itself marched on. If the Exodus movement is a photograph of the two, then the 430-year period connected with the ancient Israel must be considered with the one now. In the 430 years of sojourn and affliction, the 430-year period of sojourn and affliction with the Abraham, Isaac, Israel, which dates with the Abraham going out of Ur, coincides with our time from the Reformation by Luther to the sealing of Israel by the promise of 144,000. Quoting Patriarchs and Prophets, page 760, the actual time spent in Egypt could have been only about 215 years. For the Bible says that the sojourn of the children of Israel was 430 years. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the ancestors of the Israelites, were sojourners in Canaan. The period of 430 years dates from the promise given unto Abraham when he was commanded to leave Ur of the Chaldees. 400 years of Genesis 15:13 dates from a latter period. Notice that the period of 400 years is not only a time of sojourning, but of affliction. This, according to the scriptures, must be reckoned from 30 years later, about the time when Ishmael, he that was born after flesh, persecuted him, Isaac, that was born after spirit, Galatians 4:29. Paul in Galatians 3:15-17 says that from the making of the covenant with Abraham to the giving of the law at Sinai was 430 years. From these scriptures, then, we are not to understand that the Israelites were in Egypt 400 years. See Exodus 12:40. According to this, the 430 years began with Abraham going out of Ur and ended with the Mount Sinai. Okay, so Israel was not down in Egypt no 430 years. They were down there about 215 years. So in consequence, we have to take the entire period into consideration, beginning with Abraham, which has a definite time of certain existing condition. At the beginning of the 430 years, idolatry prevailed everywhere. Abraham alone was called out. Such is the spiritual condition that marked the beginning of the prophetic period in its type. Abraham was 75 years old when he was called out from Ur of the Chaldees to start this 430 years. Just so, the beginning of the time of the duplicate or antitype must be marked with the time of a low spiritual condition. In the time of Martin Luther, we have the exact reproduction of Abraham's experience. For in Luther's time, spiritual darkness and idolatry prevailed everywhere. Abraham is a fitting figure of the Luther. Abraham was called Yahweh by the spoken word, Luther by the written word. actually, the written word also speaks to you by inspiration. The spirit of inspiration gives you the understanding of the written words, and it directs you to that written word when it's needed. Abraham is the father of the faith, so is Luther. The doctrine taught by Luther was the just shall live by faith. To make this more clarifying, you say the just shall live by the faith, by their faith. For the just shall live by their faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant that Yahshua is the author of. So in other words, for the just shall live by the faith and the blood of the Yahshua. If this is true, then the 430 years in our time began with the Luther about 1500 A.D. Luther discovered in the library of the University of Erfurt a Latin Bible and found, unto his no small delight, that it contained more than the excerpts and common use. Thus Yahweh by his word taught Luther out of the papal Rome. We have first appeared at 400 years, and then it was extended to 430 years. We therefore have a 30-year period to deal with first. It has been stated that the 30 years ended about the time Ishmael persecuted Isaac. According unto this, about the year 1530 A.D., something must have been brought forth. What took place in 1530? The Augsburg Confession. Okay, a document compiled by Luther, which was presented by the Protestants at the Diet of Augsburg unto the Emperor Charles V and the Diet, and being signed by the Protestant states, was adopted as their creed, and who protested against the Pope. This coincides with Sarah protesting against Agar and Ishmael when they departed from the house of Abraham, and the assurance of the covenant of promise that was made with Isaac. As Sarah protested against Agar and Ishmael, so Protestants protested against the papal rule. This is just exactly what should have taken place in the 1530 A.D., the fifth occurrence of the prophecy. At the time Isaac was persecuted by Ishmael, Isaac was 5 years old, and at the time Jacob was born, Isaac was 60, therefore we had 55 years to 1530, which brings us to 1585 A.D. For the explanation of this period will be given later. From the birth of Jacob to the time Israel went into Egypt was 130 years. Adding this number unto 1585 gives us 1715 A.D. The explanation of this period also will be given later. From the time Ishmael went into Egypt to the birth of Moses was 135 years. Adding this to 1715 brings the total of 1850 A.D. This period is marked by the birth of Moses, which was a hope, a deliverer for Israel. What took place in 1850? The first testimony was written to the church and addressed to those who are receiving the seal of the living Yahweh. So, as you accept the present truth then, from 1844 on, you were sealed with the seal of Yahweh. You were sealed with his name. And you were sealed because you believed in, and you had faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant. That's what faith means. It means that you actually believe in the promise of the blood of the everlasting covenant would redeem you in the end by you just simply following and believing present truth as it unfolded to you. That's all you had to do to be accredited with having righteousness by faith and the seal of Yahweh. Thus, the birth of Moses, the hope of Israel after faith coincides with the birth of the first testimony for the church, the hope of Israel by the promise, 144,000. Thus we see a perfect harmony and the type with the antitype. See Origin and Progress of the Seventh-day Adventist, page 749. Moses, at the age of 40 years, attempted to deliver Israel and failed. Adding 40 years unto 1850, we have 1890 A.D. What happened at this time? The following statement was made by Sister White in 1892. If the people of Israel, of Yahweh had gone to work, as they should have gone to work, right after the Minneapolis meeting in 1888, the world could have been won in 2 years and the Yahweh would have come. General Conference Bulletin in 1892. This reference was given us by a Seventh-day Adventist minister of the Los Angeles, California. About the same time, 1890, National Religious Liberty was organized by the denomination. Thus, the attempt and failure of Moses' experience to set free to Israel from the Egyptian bondage coincides with organizing religious liberty, and Yahweh's people failed to do their duty. National Religious Liberty Association organized July the 21st, 1889. Origin and Progress of the SDA, page 752. 40 years later, Moses was called and sent back to Egypt and did set Israel free from the Egyptian bondage. Adding 40 years to 1890 brings the total to 1930. This period should be marked by a reformation and purification of the church, fulfilling Malachi 3 and Ezekiel 9. And that's what we had yesterday. We had Malachi 3 in our study, yes, our last study. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Yeshua shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people which shall be left, Isaiah 11:11. And that's what Yahweh did with Vicki Hardiff in 1930. He set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people. And you have to come through those channels. The Rod Movement, you have to come through and believe all the truth that was taught by Vicki Hardiff as far as inspiration will give understanding on it correctly. And that has to be taught by the Elijah David, the correct understanding of the Rod period. For those that are harvested today, they have to understand the truth, just like I'm teaching in its clarity. The two periods, 1585 and 1715, will now be explained. 1585 corresponds with the birth of Jacob, and 1715 corresponds with Israel going down into Egypt. The entering into Egypt of 70 souls typified the birth of Seventh-day Adventists, as explained on page 73 and 74. But Seventh-day Adventism was not born until 1845. To get the truth of these two periods, we must count back to the birth of Jacob, for it is a birth that we are dealing with. We have 130 years from the entrance into Egypt to the birth of Jacob, and 85 years from the birth of Jacob to Abraham's departure out of Ur. Therefore, we must go backwards and subtract the first 85-year period from the going out of Ur to the birth of Jacob, from 1930, and we have 1845. Thus, we get the year of the birth of the Seventh-day Adventist. Miss Ellen Harmon then had her first vision, and it was about the 144,000. Okay, so this is Israel by the promise. 144,000 is a spiritual Israel by the promise. The descendants of the seed of Joseph, the descendants of the seed of Abraham through Isaac, and on down. Through Yeshua, through David, through Yeshua, and on down. Israel by the promise. And the first paper published then on the Sabbath truth was called The Hope of Israel. See Origin and Progress of Seventh-day Adventist, page 749. Now subtract the 130-year period from the birth of Jacob to the entering into Egypt from 1845, and we have 1715 A.D. This year, which was marked by Israel going into Egypt, thus 17:15 becomes a dividing line between Canaan and Egypt, just as Yahshua became the dividing line between B.C. and A.D. Note how it coincides on the chart. If these coincidences were divinely designed, then the beginning and ending of the prophecy, as on the following chart, would be correct. And then it gives us our chart here. And you can't see it. I can only read it to you. Type, King James Chronology. And it gives all these dates, but you know what? I'm going to save these dates for our next study. And we may just skip over them and go right on for right now. On page 113, it says, this is the reason why we have 1500 A.D. as a starting point of this prophecy. After you got through explaining all these dates. And if these coincidences were divinely designed, then the beginning and ending of the prophecy as on this chart would be correct. See chart on Ezekiel's prophecy on page 133. And we're on page 114 now. And it goes into the prophecy of Ezekiel 4. Okay. Well, what did we learn? We're going to take up the charts, these dates, and we're going to take up the prophecy of Ezekiel 4 on study number 7. We're going to do a little review of what we just talked about here. We're talking about Israel after the Spirit and Israel after flesh is really what we're trying to pin down. Israel after this 144,000 are descendants of Israel after the Spirit from Isaac, through Isaac. And when you do that, that's reading why Yahweh made a difference between Ishmael and Isaac. He told Abraham, he says, Ishmael cannot dwell in this household with Isaac. He's Israel after the flesh. He's an Ishmaelite, he's a Muslim, but he's Israel after flesh, and he will not be heir with Israel after the Spirit. That's the reason why the 144,000 cannot be heir with the Adventist Church leadership and those that follow the General Conference. Because they're descendants of Ishmael, Israel after the flesh. That's the way it was at the cross. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, the publicans, the sinners at the cross, the Romans that were crucified Yahshua, they all collaborated together. Because they were Israel after the flesh. And do you know what that is? That's also Gentiles. They're Israelites, but they're Gentiles. Okay, you got Gentiles out in that world's got to be converted to Israel after the Spirit. And when they are converted, it means that they are also Israel after the Spirit that lives in the Gentile world. And they're identified as Gentiles. We're going to, this brings a close to our service. Our contact is at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close this service now with a song.
Oh, it must be the breaking of the day. It's almost time for the Yahshua to come. I hear the people say, the stars of heaven are growing down. Must be the breaking of the day. Oh, it must be the breaking of the day. Oh, it must be the breaking of the day. Oh, the night is almost done. The day is coming on. Oh, it must be the breaking of the day.
all stars foretold in the sun and moon, in earth and sea and sky. All love to thank you, old man, child. The coming of the Master draweth nigh. Oh, it must be the breaking of the day. Oh, it must be the breaking of the day. Oh, night is almost all. The day is coming on. Oh, it must be the breaking of the day. It must be time for the radiant church to cast her banner away. With girded loins and burning lamps, we look for the breaking of the day. Oh, it must be the breaking of the day. Oh, it must be the breaking of the day. For if night is almost gone, the day is coming on. Oh, it must be the breaking of the day. Go quickly out in the streets and lane, and in the bright harvey, and call the men all halt and blind, to be ready for the breaking of the day. Oh, it must be the breaking of the day. Oh, it must be the breaking of the day.